You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Showing off their silver leaves as we walked by. Soft kisses on a summer's day, laughing all our cares away, just you and I.
What a wonderful time of year it is, ladies and gentlemen, as we transition from summer into fall and this festive time of year. A loyal listener from Florida wrote me recently saying he knows he's listening to our show when we start each hour with a song selection from the 1950s. That's the truth. Although that was a 1960s classic there, a summer song. And we have just, of course, wrapped up our two-week Midsummer Review series that featured over the course of the last 2 weeks, in order of their most recent appearances, Paul Kersey, Mark Weber, Paul Fromm, Jared Taylor, Kevin McDonald, and Brad Griffin. All of those guys were back on the show just within the last 2 weeks. And, of course, right before that, Henrik Palmgren was back on, Jesse Lee Peterson. We did that great live broadcast from the League of the South with David Duke and Michael Hill. This summer, really this entire year, has been absolutely stellar for our program. If anybody's doing it better than we do, I'd sure like to know them. But tonight, ladies and gentlemen, the hits continue. The hits continue with the highlight of this evening's broadcast, Sam Dixon, Esquire. You know him, as I do, as a successful attorney and a legendary orator. But more importantly to me, he has been a very close, very dear friend to me and to my entire family. You know, my wife has been with me since before I started the show, which was now 14 years ago and counting. And so my friends are her friends to large extents. And she, of course, personally knows many of the personalities that we feature on this show. And I don't mind sharing this publicly. She has always referred to Sam as her favorite, and he's a fan favorite to many of you as well. Sam, welcome back.
Well, it's glad to be back. And praise from Danny is great praise indeed. I've always said that you have to be a fantastic propagandist to have propagandized such a wonderful and beautiful and gracious woman to marry you.
I don't know how it happened, Sam, but I'm sure thankful it did.
And what a brave one too, and loyal one to stand with you. You know, but with so many women would have been out the door.
Well, there's no doubt about that, and the thing about her is that she's been with me before, during, and after. When I first met her, the show had not even come about, and so she was with me during the period when we first got started, and of course, through all the ups and downs and trials and tribulations. It's just, it's been wonderful, and I thank you for your friendship and your friendship to our family. Anybody named Sam is a good guy. We've got Sam Dixon, Sam Bushman. We know him. To know him is to love him. Okay. Now, that being said, what you're on for tonight, I think, is something I'm just really eager to get this message out. You just returned from a full month spent in Russia, and you're going to share with our audience your experience and observations made over there. So what I'm going to do, this is going to be a very easy interview for me, at least the first half of it. We're going to keep you for the full hour. I just want you to tell your story. I'm going to try to ask as few questions as possible, and you just tell us what you saw over there, what it was like, your takeaways, what you think would be most interesting for the listeners to hear. Take it away, Sam.
Well, as you may know, I speak Russian. I've spoken Russian since my early youth, and I have read widely in Russian history and regard the Bolshevik Revolution as one of the supreme tragedies of all time. The part of that revolution was the murder of the imperial family, and not only the Tsar, but his wife and his children. July 16 and 17 were the 100th anniversary of the murder of the Tsar. So I'd always, from early life, I had had this goal that I wanted to be in Yekaterinburg, where the murders took place, the 100th anniversary. Of course, when I was young, I could only dream that this could take place in a country which was no longer ruled by the Communist Party. But anyway, I and several other people flew first to Beijing, and then we took the Trans-Siberian Railroad across Siberia to Yekaterinburg. And the highlight of the trip was, naturally, going to Yekaterinburg. Yekaterinburg is where the Tsar's family were taken, ultimately, by the communists. It was a mining town. It was a town with a lot of Bolshevik sympathies that had been whipped up by lies and propaganda. And they were imprisoned there in a house belonging to a merchant called the Patsyev House. And on the late on the 16th of July, 1917, their jailers awakened them and told them that they were being moved and took them down in the cellar where they had them sit on chairs. And then the murderer, a Jew named Sverdlovsk, came in and announced that they were going to be killed. There are various accounts of what the Tsar said. The one that my Russian tutor said was Zachem, which means what for? And as she pointed out, that's a good question, because he had done nothing wrong. His reign had been the reign of a very kind person, contrary to the propaganda that even now here, the Tsar had been very restrained. Capital punishment was abolished for much of his reign. Schools were opened. The land reform was put through. Parliament was called. Russia expanded economically faster under the Tsar, with only a tiny fraction of human suffering that the communists ever attained. But anyway, they were then gunned down brutally. The Grand Duchesses did not die immediately, but were then bayoneted, and the Tsarevich was finished off. But it was a brutal and horrifying murder. The bodies were then carried from the Ipatiev House to a place about 10 miles away where there was a mine, and the bodies were chopped up by these inhuman ghouls who psychologically were much the same kind of people as we see in the Antifa today, really degenerate, crazy, psychotic people. And the bodies were put into vats of acid and burned and destroyed in various ways. But amazingly, some portions of the bodies survived, and the whites liberated, the white armies liberated Yekaterinburg about 10 days after the murders, and they were not able to recover the bodies, but they did establish what had happened. It was a very interesting book written by an Englishman named Robert Walton, who was the London Times correspondent in Russia at the time. He's a person with tremendous credentials. And it's called The Last Days of the Romanovs, or Romanovs, as the Russians pronounce it. It's interesting that as the 100th anniversary of this horrific murder of these children and their parents approached, the establishment printed a new book called The Last Days of the Romanovs by a Jewish author who just purged out any of the information that would be embarrassing for the American system.
Sam, hold on right there, my friend. I hate to interrupt you as you're giving us an enthralling story, but we do have to take a break. We are going to pick up exactly where we left off when we return. Stay tuned, everybody. Sam Dixon, when you come back.
We fought. We learned. We struggled. We won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare. The war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Now, Mr. and Mrs. Sir Galahad, what seems to be the problem?
Well, it's just not working.
She's been very unrealistic.
Really?
Ever since he rescued me from the dragon, we've been drifting apart.
That's not true.
We were supposed to live happily ever after.
Now, this isn't a fairy tale.
At first, he was gallant and chivalrous, opening doors for me, holding my chair, taking my arm.
All right, I'm not as young as I used to be.
He simply isn't the man who swept me off my feet.
Well, you're not as young as you used to be.
Mr. Sir Galahad, maybe if you started by just holding Mrs. Sir Galahad's hand when you're together.
Really?
Yes, try it.
Okay.
All right.
Go on, take her hand. Careful, little Laura.
Marriage. You're never too far apart when you're still holding hands. From your neighbors, The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Now, look into each other's eyes. That's right. Raise your visor.
Oh, they're blue, dear.
Yeah.
For more tips on strengthening your marriage, visit family.mormon.org.
Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? As a physician, I have looked into the eyes of one-pound babies. I have cradled their small bodies in the palm of one hand. I defy those who are careless, who would disregard life and look at these tiny little miracles and say, we're not going to protect that.
But I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
Searching, searching, every night and day, if we gotta keep on the run, follow the sun.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And now back to tonight's show.
Great radio each week, every week. That's what we give you here. And with the best guest, or at least the guest that I think you should be hearing from. And over the course of the past 2 weeks, you've heard from, as I just mentioned a moment ago, Paul Kersey, Mark Weber, Paul Fromm, Jared Taylor, Kevin McDonald, Brad Griffin. Next week, Isla, Wife with a Purpose, Stewart will be on. And the week after that, Tomislav Sunik. Of course, right now with us is Sam Dixon, the racial communitarian activist par excellence. But speaking of Tom Sunik, that is, I got to tell you, Sam, when I announced on Twitter that you were going to be our guest this evening, Tom Sunik was the first to respond saying, Sam Dixon's a great man, a man of honor and integrity, and a good scholar, too. So you have the universal respect of your peers.
Tom Sunik. He and I belong to a mutual admiration society.
He's a good guy. I like Tom a lot. And anyway, so he's going to be coming up in 2 weeks' time on this show. You're here with us tonight, and you're talking about Russia. And speaking of Twitter, this is the Sam is on Twitter now, ladies and gentlemen. You might want to follow him.
Amazing.
He has one.
Amazing.
You have a grand total of one tweet to your name, but man, wasn't it a doozy. And it reads thusly, I am just back from 30 days in Russia, where I attended the ceremonies conducted by the Russian Orthodox Church. We need to talk about that in a minute. Marking the 100th anniversary of the murder of the royal family. A really moving event. 100,000 people marching, led by the patriarch. And that's, of course, what you're on to talk with us tonight about, Sam. I couldn't imagine. I went to the burial of the crew of the Hunley in Charleston, South Carolina, I guess about 10 years ago, and there was tens of thousands of people there for that the official last burial of a Confederate soldier, and that was probably one of the most, other than my marriage, the birth of my children, maybe the most moving moment I've ever had in my life. I couldn't imagine 100,000, though. I couldn't imagine to see what you saw in Russia, a Russia that was so lost to the dark side when you were born. And now today, it may be the key of white survival. Continue on with your story.
Well, the picking up with the interment of the bodies, the communists celebrated this murder. They embraced it. They initially tried to deny it while they were still fighting for their life against the loyal Russians. But they named the streets Canterbury Zierdlosk after the murder, and unfortunately one of them is still named that way. But as time wore on, late in the 60s and 70s, the house where they were murdered in the cellar was still standing, and it became a focal point of Russian nationalist and monarchist and Christian pilgrimage. They would find crosses left at night or flowers. And this disturbed the communists. And Yeltsin, who was the governor of, or mayor of Ekaterinburg, gave orders that it be destroyed to eliminate any possibility of it being a site of anti-communist monarchist pilgrimage. Well, after the fall of communism, the Russian Orthodox Church canonized the royal family and made them saints. And they erected over where the Ipatiev house had stood the cathedral on the spilled blood. And the altar there is right above the cellar where the family were murdered. It's a beautiful church full of icons and mosaics of the royal family depicted as saints. And that was where the ceremony took place. There was a preliminary march on the 16th. From the train station where the family had arrived in 1917 to the cathedral. And then that night, there was a 2.5-hour religious service conducted by the Patriarch of the Russian Orthodox Church, assisted by a large number of bishops and other officials. I tell you, you have to have strong legs and back to be an Orthodox Christian. Their services are very, very long. But they built a dais out over the hill that the cathedral sits on, and they conducted the service there. As the tweet said, there were 100,000 people who gathered from all over Russia with icons and pictures of the royal family to commemorate the murder. It was interesting that they had three units of the Russian army who were there. Perhaps to prevent communists, they still have communists in Russia, from desecrating the church or creating a disturbance. Otherwise, I don't know why they were there. But they had two male units and one female unit. I watched them. I was somewhat disappointed. Only about 1 in 6 crossed themselves or bowed, as did the people attending the service. But you know, at least some of them did. One interesting detail was that the Russian women in this unit were so feminine. It was so unlike women in the American military. And they had uniforms that fit the female body beautifully, and they had attractive shoes rather than boots, and white gloves, and hats with snazzy little hats. And they were really fine looking women. But anyway, the patriarch conducted a service, and then the people marched a very long distance. It was a 6.5-hour long march. And that old man, the patriarch, led that march to, I think it's called Yamagachina or something. It's the site where the bodies were uncovered. Late in the communist period, people began looking for the bodies that they were aware from peasants who had reported where they had seen these trucks going, the general area. And there was a man who went there and found traces of the bodies and the jewelry, who remained silent until communism collapsed, because they were afraid they would come back and finish the job. But when it collapsed, as many of your listeners will know, they did do these excavations, and they did find the bones and the teeth and various parts of the bodies and jewelry that belonged to the royal family. They identified them primarily by a tooth, but initially there was a tooth that had very fine dentistry, and it matched the dental records of the Tsaritsa, as Russians call her. She's not called Tsarina, which is a made-up name, but Tsaritsa. And then they did DNA tests on the remains, and they traced them down. I think even Prince Philip in England, who's a descendant of the Romanovs, gave DNA, and they established they were the body. If you go online and Google the funeral service of Tsar Nicholas, you will see a very moving story of how the remains of the bodies, along with their servants who were murdered with them, were transported by plane to St. Petersburg after the fall of communism, and they were buried with their ancestors in the fortress of St. Peter and St. Paul. That's a really impressive thing. I heard a member of the English royal, British royal family interviewed who was a relative of them, and she had gone back for that, and she commented on how astonished the family were. The exiled Romanovs returned and were invited back to the service, which was attended by Yeltsin, and that the people in St. Petersburg lined the streets and knelt and crossed themselves as the royal family's remains were carried by. But anyway, returning to Yekaterinburg, they've erected the cathedral on the spilled blood above the cellar where they were murdered, and they've erected a monastery out in the country where the bodies were buried, and they marched from the cathedral to the burial site. It was really a very impressive thing. And, of course, taking the motto of the New York Times, all the news that's fit to print, and putting it in its correct form, all the news that fits, this story was almost completely unreported in the American news media.
That's one of the reasons I was so thrilled to be able to have you on tonight. I haven't seen it anywhere. I did a cursory review and couldn't find it. I guess if I had dug a little deeper, maybe I would have found something, but certainly it was obscured and for obvious reasons. This isn't Red Eye, so we can't keep going until we run out of gas. It's commercial talk radio, so we do have to take these breaks, which I regret. But we will come back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
I'm Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
There's so much I wanted to cover with Sam Dixon tonight. Such riveting radio, such a riveting story to know that he was over there on the 100th anniversary of the murder of Tsar Nicholas and his beautiful family. At the hands of the Jewish Bolsheviks, that he was there is just an incredible life story. And we want to hear all about it. But as we often talk about here, almost weekly, I guess, on this program, the encouraging trends from Eastern Europe, how encouraging they appear to be. I've gone so far as to say that Russia, Hungary, Croatia, some of those other neighboring countries, that they are the key to white survival as we know it here in the current year. And there's countless examples from which we can draw upon to defend that position. And I wanted to get into that a little bit with Sam tonight, but I don't want to shortchange the firsthand accounting and perspective that he can give us from his month spent in Russia during July. So what I'd like to ask Sam, if you don't mind me asking this publicly on the air, we've got a couple of guests coming up in the next couple of weeks, but perhaps on September 1st, if we could have you back, I would like to share with you some stories that I have drawn some inspiration and hope from that are coming from Russia, Hungary, Croatia, Slovakia, some of these other countries over there. If we could do that so we don't have to spend time on that tonight. Can we have you back in about 2 or 3 weeks?
I'd be happy.
Okay, well, we make a mental note and we'll put you on the books, and we will shelve that part of the conversation. We'll kick that can a couple of weeks down the road because I want to focus exclusively now this hour on your experience in Russia, and you're giving us a very enthralling story of that. So please continue.
Well, I'm really almost at the end. I stood with the people at the service, and they were curious when they found out I was an American, and a lot of them asked how I came to be there. They were so overjoyed to have somebody who was an American come and join them in commemorating the anniversary. It was very, very touching to talk to them and to speak with them of how their family had maintained the truth and the commitment to the Church of Russia, to Christianity, to the history of Russia during 3 generations of brutal communist rule, when it was death to be caught with an icon or a picture of the Tsar. It's an amazing story how these people preserved this in the face of huge risk. When we live in a country in which people will just submit themselves to the most cowardly, craven behavior for fear that they won't get invited to a cocktail party, it really makes you admire the Russians more and more and understand why the system that rules our country, which is not an American system, it's an anti-American system, why that system hates and loathes Russia and wants to destroy it. Russia is an obstacle to their end agenda, which is the eradication of European Christian civilization and of us as a distinct people. And they don't like being told no, and they are determined to convince Americans that Russians and Russia are our enemies, and they're not. We share no border with Russia. We've never fought a war with Russia. We ought to have mutually beneficial trade relations with Russia. Russia is the guardian of European Christian peoples against 1.5 billion Chinese. But instead, you see this unrelenting hate campaign against Russia that is carried to really extraordinary levels. And it's disappointing that unlike these Russians, so few Americans can see through the system propaganda. You take, for instance, this group of women called the Pussy Riot, and the use of the word pussy is from Russian. It is exactly the vulgar use of the word in our language. That's what these women are. are vulgar, dirty little tarts. And if you
it's celebrated universally by our media.
Oh, yes. If you remember the incident, these women went to a Russian Orthodox church. They entered the church. They went down to the front of the church. They entered the area of the church, which in the Russian Orthodox Church is reserved solely for priests. They invaded that area and began belting out vulgar songs insulting the Virgin Mary. They were asked to leave by the priest, and they refused to leave. Well, the priest called the police, and these dirty, vulgar little prostitutes were arrested, as they should have been, as they would be in America. Can you imagine if you and I went into a synagogue and refused to leave and began belting out anti-Semitic songs insulting Jews? Would there be tears shed in the editorial room of the New York Times or National Review? Remember, even National Review, to show you just how bad the fake conservatives are, the fake opposition that the CIA agent Buckley set up in the 1950s to be the fake, channelized, controlled opposition to the system for which he had worked as a CIA agent. Even National Review, a so-called Catholic, Roman Catholic-tinged publication, ran editorials supporting the Pussy Riot and talking about how Putin had violated freedom of speech by prosecuting these wonderful young women who were exercising their political rights by invading a church, refusing to leave, invading areas that they're not supposed to go into, and be belting out vulgarity about the Virgin Mary. National Review's sympathies were as deeply engaged with the Pussy Riot as New York Times, and our government was heavily in support of them. The whole American media. This is the level of hatred and lying that our country's system that misrules it has toward Russia. And virtually everything we hear about Russia is untrue. I speak Russian. I was able to talk fairly well with the Russian people. I detected no fear of Putin. People who didn't like him spoke to me openly in restaurants of why they didn't like him. Most people seemed to like him. Even they gave criticisms of him. I met with a number of people who were Russian nationalists, and they had two criticisms of him that they would openly discuss at a table in a restaurant where others could hear. They criticized him for not controlling pop culture, that he's allowing the sort of MTV filth on Russian television, but black males featured with Russian women, but there are no blacks in the country, and other destructive anti-Russian material in so-called pop culture. And then they complain that he is not grooming a successor, so that if he dies, there's a danger that someone else, pleasing to the globalists and the New York Times, comes to the fore. But anyway, I saw no evidence of tyranny or oppression. You know, the papers were free, the people were free, but we're told constantly how oppressed people there are. They even, the State Department, while they even sent out an advisory warning American tourists that it's dangerous to go to Russia because of all the riots that are going on against Putin. This is totally made up, just made up completely. Just a lying State Department by a lying American government.
Well, that was something that was actually a couple of the things I was going to touch upon with you, Sam. The fact that Putin won 76% of the vote earlier this year in his reelection bid. And all of the positive trends that we see coming out of Russia. In Russia, the number of people who self-identify as Orthodox Christians rose from 37% in 1991 to 71% in 2016. And so there's so many encouraging trends we see going on over there, and none of it is coming from some sort of authoritarian gambit. Yeah, authoritarian gambit. This is, which frankly, in the right hands, I'm not opposed to. But in this case, this is organic. This is real. They support him because he is doing right by the people of Russia, which we could only hope for here in this country.
Yeah, we don't have that kind of country. We don't have that kind of church here. As you know, I'm a Presbyterian. I belong to the Church of Scotland. and I call my church the Church of Anti-Scotland, because the Presbyterian Church is hostile to every legitimate interest and right of its following in Scotland and in America. The clergy, the official church, will always oppose what's good for us, whereas the Russian Orthodox Church actually champions the Russian people. I wish we had churches like that. I wish the Church of England, the Church of Scotland, really had the interests of their people at heart instead of being hostile to us.
Well, thankfully, the Southern Baptist Convention, the Southern Baptist Convention is really, really towing the line, though.
Yeah. Well,
I know you know all about that story. Hey, folks, we got one more break with Sam Dixon, and we're going to get Sam back, but we're going to continue on with his accounting from his time in Russia. Don't miss it. One more segment to come.
Let's hang on and come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Getting the kids to school, cleaning the house, doing the laundry. It seems that the work routine as a stay-at-home mom is never ending. And even though I'm the prime grocery shopper in our family of four, I simply don't have time to scrutinize all the labels on the countless food products I buy. Oh, sure, I've noticed all the latest certification seals. Organic, non-GMO, gluten-free. It definitely seems to be the latest craze. But it was only recently that kosher certification seals caught my attention. You see, my husband had me download an app called Kosher-tify, and it shed light on a century-old certification industry that slipped under the radar screen from the majority of our public. I also noticed a question mark at the end of the app name, and that makes great sense as there's far more questions regarding this industry than answers. In fact, the developers refer to this as the kosher question. Sure, I'm a busy mom and didn't pay attention to our food culture, but now I have transparency, a convenient grocery list feature, and the ability to eat in favor of my family's best interests, and you can discover it too at thekosherquestion.com.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's LibertyNewsRadio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Once I knew that we had Sam Dixon confirmed for tonight's show, I actually did quite a bit of research, and I pulled a number of encouraging headlines that I could gather from Eastern Europe, from Russia, from Hungary, from Slovenia, from Croatia, even from Italy, which is, of course, not quite Eastern Europe, but there are some positive trends even happening in Italy now with their new prime minister. So these were things that I was going to make mention of with Sam and get his take on in a rapid-fire segment. But I do not want to shortchange the first-hand accounting that he is sharing with you tonight, ladies and gentlemen, from his month spent in Russia. So, as you heard, we will go ahead and save the date. Let's just say Saturday, September 1st, we will have Sam back on to talk about some of these other things and get his takes, his take on these, if that's okay with you, and if that's okay with Sam. But I want to finish this hour out about his trip. Now, Sam, you spent a month there, so you obviously saw and experienced much more than just the memorial service, which I guess would certainly be the highlight of the trip. But let's talk about your day-to-day activities over there in terms of how you would compare it to a day in the life of the average American. You're from Atlanta. So a day in the life of someone walking the streets of Atlanta, what did you see? What did you hear? What were your takeaways, your observations?
I will start with my entrance into Russia. I started in Beijing and took the Trans-Siberian Railroad north into Russia. By the way, when I arrived in China, the immigration control people divided the people on the plane coming into the airport into two lines. One was Chinese nationals returning home. One was foreigners. 100% of the Chinese returning home were Chinese. About 70% of the foreigners coming to America were Chinese, which shows the difference between China, which is an ethnostate, and America, in which we are being colonized by people from other countries and are being told that we have no right to a state of our own as white people, that we that is immoral and racist for us to ask for the same thing that the Chinese have or that the Jewish people have created with their Zionist state in the Middle East. But that was the personal thing I noticed about immigration. But when I came across the border into Siberia, I was impressed with how carefully the Russians were managing immigration. They stopped the train. All the foreigners got off, sat in the waiting room. I was one of the first people called. I went into a room to be, I filled out a long questionnaire about who I was, my parents, my profession, military service, and so on. So I was called in. There was a very fine-looking, blonde, blue-eyed young Russian boy there interviewing people. He looked like he was about 14, but blonde people often look very young. And so he was very conscientious. He went over this form line by line and asked follow-up questions. And when he saw that I'd been in the military, he wanted to know when, had I been trained in special forces. And so on. He was also very curious as to how I came to speak Russian and asked how that was, obviously thinking it'd be a good chance that I was sort of an intelligence agent. And I told him I had learned it from a white Russian, a woman who was a nurse in the white Russian army. I had hoped this would make him happy. Neither he nor the other people in the room seemed happy about that. I guess they still are influenced by the communist propaganda. But anyway, he asked if I was going to help him translate other English-speaking visitors, which I did. And I asked him, I said, I don't see any sign of any Asiatic blood in you. You look very European to me. And he replied rather firmly, I am 100% European. I have no Mongol blood. And so I said, well, how long has your family been in Siberia? And he replied evenly, 5 generations. So there's no big thing there. But anyhow, we took the train across Russia, and one last thing about the Tsars, I found out how really thick these Bolsheviks were and how similar they are to the Antifa. There's a grave of one of the killers there, and this guy, after brutally killing the parents and their children, cavorted around to the laughter and glee of the other murderers, sexually assaulting the body of the Tsaritsa. And this guy's grave is now a site of communist pilgrimage. They go and cover it with flowers. They love this guy. And you can see the Antifa doing that. They're the same kind of sick human detritus. That would get into that kind of thing. But anyway, we went on to Moscow and trying to bring this to a hasty conclusion. I met with a person I know there who was an aide to the Duma and who showed us around. We went to the Russian Military Museum with him. I was very impressed that they treated the whites and communists evenly. There was no more propaganda against the whites, and they identified the communists in the exhibits by their real names as well as the Russian assumed names. That was very impressive. And we revisited the Church of Christ the Savior, which was the first church destroyed by the Bolsheviks in Russia. They absolutely leveled it to the ground and took 10 tons of gold out of it, in which they used, as my friend pointed, the Russian pointed out, they used it to finance Kulakization, the destruction of the Russian peasantry. So he said it was a double blow to Christian Russia, what they did. But it's a beautiful church. It was the first church restored after the fall of the communist government. In a population of 10 million in Moscow, in the midst of excruciating poverty and economic upheaval, one out of every 10 people in Moscow gave money to rebuild this church after the communists fell. And it has been rebuilt, not with the gold. They can't afford that. But it's a very, very fine church, and it's dedicated to two Russian national saints, including Dmitry Donskoy, who is the Grand Duke of Moscow, who defeated the Mongols and broke Russia free from the Mongols could begin the process of Russia rejoining Christendom, European Christian civilization. So anyway, those were my experiences going across Russia, and I found the people very friendly. The streets were very safe. There were no riots. There was no reason for any American tourist to be concerned. Any American going there is perfectly safe. It was very uplifting to be in a country like that, of physically fit, healthy people, pretty much of the same race, who have a genuine country. And not an aggregation of economic and tribal interests which run America, which is what we have in the country here. One final thing, it's very interesting to see the relation between the sexes in Russia, which are so much healthier than they are here. There's still a lot of romance among young Russians. You see young boys in high school, high school, college age, carrying flowers to their girlfriends. You see them holding hands in cafes and this kind of thing. You didn't get the raw, crude sex and sort of the feminist hostility to males or the male misogyny that you see in America toward members of the opposite sex. It's a much, much healthier culture than what we unfortunately have now in America.
Well, that what you just shared with us, Sam, was exactly what I was hoping to hear. The firsthand testimony of something like that, which we would expect but not know entirely had we not been there. And that's why we wanted to have you on the show tonight. And I appreciate you filling this hour so effortlessly.
I have to warn you, we should engage in truth and advertising. And a friend of mine brought me today a book, the existence of which I was unaware, called The Plot to Destroy Democracy. And it's written by an African-American named Malcolm Nance, who the flyleaf says is a nationally recognized, globally recognized intelligence community member and a national security and counterterrorism analyst for NBC News and MSNBC. And he explains in there that I am conspiring with Putin to destroy American democracy. And he has
written. Oh, you're in the book.
Back. Yeah. He has two pages about me. And how I'm planning to destroy democracy in America and conspiring with Putin. The idea.
I only wish that were true.
Oh, this joke, this pathetic joke that he's writing, and he's considered a global expert. Thank God Putin, President Trump did not listen to our intelligence community, as the New York Times and mainstream media so darkly said. You'd think the liberals used to be against the military-industrial complex, or pretended they were. Now they're total pimps for the arms industry and the merchants of death. When you look at Iraq, we now know how the CIA lied, how the State Department lied, how the FBI lied to create that war. We need presidents that don't listen to, quote, our, end quote, intelligence agencies, because they're not any more our than the American media is American. They are their intelligence agencies, and it's their media. There's nothing American about it.
But in Russia, wouldn't you know, and how refreshing is it to know that there is a government in that is working on behalf of its own people? I have never lived in under a government that worked on behalf of its own people, so I wouldn't know. But you have a government over there that does.
You have lived all of your life under a government that is hostile to its own people.
That's absolutely right. Sam Dixon, I love you, brother. I will look forward to having you back on this program in 3 weeks' time, and we will talk about some good news coming from Eastern Europe. We didn't get to it tonight because you had too much to share, which I'm thankful for as well. Thank you, Sam. We'll talk to you again soon. Third hour still coming for the rest of you, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned.